Now, for something completely different, here is your host, former New York City radio star, now relegated to third-tier podcasting, Brian Wilson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and people of all sexes, especially those of you feeding rainbows to the unicorn this month, it's time once again to hold your head up high and take a walk in the mud with that attitude and fortitude that you'll show the world. You never give up that ship. And while the great Eddie Lawrence couldn't be with us today, the two and only have once again reunited to provide an existential threat to our podcasting and to your intellect with thoughts and observations more startling than a presidential faceplant at the Air Force Academy. For all of you with questionable taste joining us here for the first time, let me introduce ourselves. Brian Wilson's my name. Actually, it was supposed to be Jeffrey, but my mother won a raffle sponsored by the Little Sisters of Questionable Virtue, and naming your next child Brian was the prize. So on a happier note, joining me a mere 809 miles away in his humble chapeau, the nationally revered journalist and prodigious author, the New York Post's unofficial bombardier, and recent winner of the Lysander Spooner Beard-alike contest, James Bovard.
Thanks, Brian. It's always, I'm always on the edge of my chair waiting to hear your latest beard joke.
Well, I thought, being parallel, being a winner, being a lookalike of Lysander Spooner. I mean, man, what a giant brain that guy was.
He's someone who did some wonderful work. I've got to take a step back. You were talking about how you were almost named different. It was the same thing for me. There was a threat that my mother made to my father when she was pregnant, because my father was doing a fair amount of traveling at that point, and she warned him that if he was out of town at the time I was born, she was going to name me Greg.
Whoa. Well, better than Sue.
Ah, that's true. That was a funny song the first time you heard it back in 1969.
Well, it made a lot of money. I guess all that really matters, you know, and so on. But speaking of childhood memories, you know, I was looking at your website, your blog, rather, with jimbovard.com, and the story about getting a lesson, teenage kids, children getting a lesson, is a great lesson. A job is a great lesson. I don't have it right up here in front of me, so I'm fumbling up with the title, but it's easily found at jimbovard.com. And I was thinking, after reading Public Policy Hooligan, I'm trying to recall, your first job was with the Peaches, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had a number of different jobs. I mean, I was doing, you know, getting paid to mow lawns and, you know, bootlegging and stuff like that. But yeah, so the first job I had was when I was 15, I had to work in an orchard because the feds basically prohibited kids under the age of 16 from doing non-agriculture work. And it was memorable because there were two things. There was the foreman was a retired 20-year Army drill sergeant who was always snarling, always smoking, always coughing. It's the mountains of Virginia, so I could never understand what the hell he said. And I would say, excuse me, you heard what I said? You hell do it, boy. And then the other memory was a guy, a coworker in his mid-30s who had had some drinking issues and stuff like that. But he was interesting. He was the first good-natured person I met who scoffed at almost everything in life, because most of the time people who are always scoffing are kind of surly, but this guy wasn't. And he was memorable because almost everything in life that he heard or comment about, he was able to summarize in either two phrases: that really burns my ass, and no shit. And so ever after, you know, it's kind of like back in the 1990s, it was fashionable for kids to wear these bracelets with WWJD, what would Jesus do?
Yeah.
And my version of that is, what would my old peach picking buddy Albert say? And the answer is almost always no shit.
No shit. Yeah. I like the column. It brought back memories. I was raised on a poultry farm, and everybody works. You're raised on a farm, and the first job I had was that I can recall was collecting eggs and shoveling chicken crap out of the roost and things like that, shooting rats at night with my brother out in the chicken houses and so on. Of course, you get paid for that, but it was something to do with that. That brought to mind, well, what was the first paid job that I had? And that was at a place in New Jersey called the Anthony Wayne Charcoal Ovens, which was a roadside.
That's encouraging.
Yeah. Oh, it was a great place, a little roadside place. You pull over and you go in and they had a very limited menu, cheeseburger, hamburger, hot dogs and whatever. And the big attraction was that they really did cook all this stuff over a charcoal grill. That was part of the deal. And I was on the job that day. I was short order cook with this other older guy. He took care of all the meats. I took care of the French fries and, you know, some of the other stuff. And I don't remember a whole lot about the job other than this one particular the people would come in and this one particular order came back and said he wanted a hamburger. Well done. They went over and sat the thing. So there was guys waiting. And so, all right, great, terrific. You know, it's a hamburger. I mean, you know, he puts it in, he sells it out. 2 minutes later, he comes back, guy says, not well done. Not well done enough. A little bite out of it, you know. So we took the thing, put it on the grill. And I say we did. The guy's name, the nickname, guy, this guy's nickname was the Indian. I don't know why. And he finds it up, you know, and he sends it back out. Comes back again. Came back 3 times. The guy said it wasn't well done enough. And my partner said, he's really getting PO'd. So he said, all right, you want it well done? I'll give you well done. He throws it out, reaches down, takes out a bun, picks up a piece of charcoal, then stuck it in the middle of the bun, and handed it back to the guy. About 2 minutes later, you hear, the rest is kind of ugly, but there's no point. I just remember the things you learn, you know, on your first day on the job.
I got to say, it's kind of bizarre that you get some guy at a roadside place in New Jersey acting like he's at the Palm and ordering an $80 filet. No. It's like, dude, it's a freaking hamburger. If it's cooked, exactly. Shut up.
Yeah. Well, it was on the place was located off Route 46, which if anybody's been up that neck of the woods, Route 46 is one of the main arteries into Manhattan. So on the weekends, you know, the place was pretty much packed with people coming out of Manhattan and all the
mystery solved.
Yeah, all the charming personalities that would have to get out from the comfort and confines of the concrete canyons, come out where the rednecks and goobers lived out in the country to, I don't know, get to see fresh air or something like that, but whatever. It was an interesting experience. I did meet some nice people there, but we'll go into that some other time. Speaking of meeting nice people,
it sounds like a zesty story, but we'll just move along and keep this family friendly.
Pretty much, yes. Well, remember, I was only 16, you know, so never mind. It's
the stories you've told. Well, no, all right, we'll just shut up.
No, well, sure. I'm going to take care. Let's bring what is it? The bring down the curtain of mercy.
Pull the curtain of mercy, as Mark Twain would say.
Yeah, there you go. But before we get it too tightly closed, you also wrote about Mandy Cohen. In fact, you had a post on Facebook the other day, said you were looking for information about her and so on. I couldn't find anything that you wouldn't have found already. But the subsequent column that you wrote about that, this new appointee for disease control and prevention, at the CDC, she sounds like a really good-looking, nasty person. You know, she's not someone to mess with.
Yeah, I was talking to some folks in North Carolina that was saying, yeah, you know, she had really bad policies, but she was kind of hot. And I was thinking, you know, I didn't know that the curve in North Carolina went that far. For the grading. She's the Biden's new choice for CDC chief. She's a telegenic authoritarian straight out of liberal central casting.
Well, that is unfortunate. But yeah, I wonder, was there a big hurry to fill that position in light of, you know, some new as yet unknown germ heading our way? Or it was just, you know, just business as usual inside the logic-free zone?
No, there's something much more important. It's called the Biden reelection campaign.
Oh, that.
This is some of the news reports said that was part of the reason that she was put in that place, because she's good in front of a camera. She's apparently fairly quick verbally, at least by North Carolina standards. Mm-hmm. But she's originally from Massachusetts, I think. She's went to Harvard, so, you know.
Of course.
We will... draw the curtain of mercy on that too.
Right. But on the other hand, you know, if I understand between the lines, what you're suggesting is during this Biden reelection campaign, which he'll be doing from the basement and all of his surrogates will be doing from platforms and microphones, she is going to be one that might be called forward to actually speak. But with the story that you reported about how she treated the residents of North Carolina with respect to COVID and all of the iron fist administration stuff that she did, and how it's all subsequently turned out, all the revelations now about the vaccines and ivermectin and Fauci and so on. It would seem to me that she would not necessarily want to be someone who they would put out on the stage and resurrect all those ideas.
Well, I mean, I think she does well compared to the vice president.
I don't know, I haven't heard her laugh yet, but I'll give her a
That's true. It's always important to judge a person by their laugh. And if is you know, that vice presidential laugh, I mean, that's going to cost her at least 3 million votes.
Got it. We here at the Two and Only, we don't try to keep up on every soupçon of current events, but there was a rather remarkable little dam incident over in Ukraine, apparently, this morning or last night, and awful lot of speculation of why it happened, who did it, and what it means. Do you have any, have you cobbled together any thoughts on that, Jim?
Yeah, it was probably done by the Ukraine army. They're the ones that had talked about doing it before. They might have done some test attacks on the dam, and it's apparently part of their military strategy. So I think it's complete BS to say, well, this is another thing the Russians did, and this is why we had to give them F-18s, not just F-16s. There was Tucker Carlson had some good points on that, but it's just, you know, I'm just mortified to see the U.S. plunging further and further into this conflict. That is not vital to our national interest. I mean, you know, Biden's so concerned about the borderline between Ukraine and Russia. Too bad he doesn't care about the borderline between Mexico and Texas. So it's most a part of my frustration is that we have very little honest information about how that war is going or about the how far the U.S. is involved. And I don't see, you know, there's a handful of people on Capitol Hill who are trying to raise hell on that issue. But there was a vote last month or so on whether to appoint an inspector general to oversee the $100 billion plus in aid that we've promised to Ukraine. Most of it's been delivered. And a lot of the Democrats were totally opposed to any kind of oversight because people might find out how the money's being spent.
Yeah, I heard that. There were a couple of Republicans in on that too, but I too.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, just horrible. I mean, it's you know, both parties have been weak on this. Democrats have been worse. There was a Democratic Peace Caucus. Well, I think like 17 members of the House were among the most left-wing members, and they'd sent a letter to Biden, I believe, a couple months ago, basically calling for, you know, U.S. to support a ceasefire or to try to lower the chances of a nuclear war with Russia. And the Biden White House pissed and moaned. And so on the following day, the 17 members of Congress canceled their letter and say, well, I'm sorry we sent it. It's like, this is so pathetic. And tell me about self-government. I mean, Biden did not campaign in 2020 in favor of World War III, but, you know, we're just kind of drifting here and, you know, it could work out very badly.
Well, I think that's for most people who are following the bouncing ball, that's really where the problem is starting to get ratcheted up. I don't know if anybody's got a, you know, like the doomsday clock or any of the rest of that business going on. But as these things escalate and escalate with moving troops closer to the border, and now we're popping a dam, that's going to be fun for anybody on that one. But one of the articles I read was, well, one of the strategic operations was if they drain the lake, as it were, it'll be easier for them to get back and forth to the other side and attack people. I said, well, that sounds like a Pyrrhic victory to me, but at the same token, I've always had the notion that this whole Ukrainian effort was first and foremost really poking the bear, really teasing the bear. You know, you go to a certain point, and you know you're going to sending drones into Moscow, and so somewhere somebody over there is going to get, you know, somebody like Putin may just get totally pissed off, and something very exciting might happen. The fact that they're using all of our material, all of our weapons, are being trained in our on how to use it. I wouldn't be surprised if there were a couple of Caucasian hands, you know, that there were from America that were in there, you know, pulling strings and pushing buttons. But how much longer can this go on? How much further can they press this?
Good question, but you know, we have no idea because everything is secret. About the only only credible information we've gotten from the federal government this year is the leaks from the Discord gaming group. Because most of those leaks just exposed horrendous, blatant falsehoods by the State Department, Pentagon, and the White House on how the war is going. I mean, if you look at the confidential documents, Ukraine Army not doing so good. You know, this isn't so good. That's not so good. You listen to the secretary say, oh, it's going great, and we can't have a ceasefire because, it's doing God's work or some kind of claptrap. But it's just so many of the people in Washington who are pushing this war are the types of people who have never even gotten in a fight in a bar. And they have no idea what physical combat is, and they're gung-ho on the carnage continuing, when the only decent position should be for the U.S. to try to support a ceasefire. The U.S. doesn't have a magic wand, but it's just for our Secretary of State to openly oppose a ceasefire. Nothing good is going to come from perpetuating this war. Neither side is going to win. It's a complete mess.
Well, I think that's all true. I would also be inclined to believe that there is going to be one group of winners, and those are going to be the Raytheons and the General Dynamics, and
very much,
you know, all those folks who are manufacturing this stuff faster than the as fast as they possibly can, draining our supplies to protect the motherland. That'd be us, to where, you know, armies are running short of ammunition and tanks and all the rest. We'll be shipping that stuff over there. And where is that? Like you say, there's been no record keeping of that. One is beyond depressing. And when you see Lindsey Graham, I saw one this morning, Lindsey Graham meeting with Zelensky, and they were talking about Russians are dying, and this is money well spent. And figured, man, oh man.
This is appalling.
It is appalling. Where the hell did that come from?
Yeah, I mean, so perhaps Lindsey Graham would like to have a special line on the IRS 1040 to ask if people want to donate extra tax dollars to kill Russians. I mean, it's that stupid. It is not in our interest to have mass killing of any foreign nation, including the Russians.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head a little bit earlier. I think one of the big problems is, and it's usually where you can always find the biggest problem, is in the media, the news media, the reporting, and, you know, who's saying what about which, and nobody's given a straight answer. It's all rainbows and lollipops and unicorns. We're doing so well over there, and any minute now, you know, Russia's going to give up, and we're going to go over there and start building houses or some other nonsense. And it's apparently it's not even close to that. That Putin's a pretty sharp guy. Of course, you have to hate him, of course, because he's Russian, and you really have to hate Putin. If you're not red, white, and blue-blooded American, if you don't hate Putin, it's worrisome. It's worrisome that they keep pushing and pushing and pushing, and here at home they keep pushing and pushing, pushing on domestic issues, everything from gas stoves and prohibitions and things along that order. You just wonder what are you really looking for here? What is the people that are calling the shots? What do you really want? You know, let's
submission.
Submission exactly.
Is what they want. Submission to anything that they dictate. And it's amazing how many things the government does that are no longer controversial, like this censorship industrial complex. The feds have bankrolled all these federal contractors going out and browbeating Twitter and Facebook to censor American citizens, making a complete travesty of the First Amendment. And yet there was a story in the Washington Post yesterday that talked as if it was this whole censorship thing was basically a conspiracy theory. And besides, they're doing it for our own good.
Well, I don't have the article in front of me. It was something I thought we might have an opportunity to discuss, but it was it was an article, I think it was in Roll Call. I don't like to predict things. I'm not prescient of a crystal ball, but there have been things coming along, and you just have this wild thought that say, well, I know what's going to happen next. And what's going to happen next is truth is going to be racist. And that apparently is we're getting to that point.
Was this an article from like 4 or 5 years ago?
I'm trying to recall what I noted first and foremost. It was actually a story that ricocheted off of a comment from ESPN. And Without the article in front of me to refresh my memory, I just was taken with the fact that the announcer, the evil announcer, had something that equivocated, something about transgender women playing basketball or something between blacks and whites or something. And someone else at ESPN or one of the other outlets took her to task because they're saying essentially the truth, objective truth, is racist. Objective truth cannot be objective, and if you claim it's objective, it has to be racist, because objective truth was actually an offshoot, and then they go back and they dredge up the history of the world and Caucasians and males and all the rest of that, eventually till they can get to the point of saying that if you say that this is an objective truth, then that's racist, because the objective truth reveals that your position is wrong. And of course, the owner of the wrong position is of a different melanin content.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a lot deeper than most articles in Roll Call, or much deeper than what comes out of ESPN. But it's unfortunate that as time has gone on, there are more and more ideas or facts which you're not supposed to mention, and it doesn't help people for being able to keep a leash on the government or in the politicians if they are not able to know what the heck is going on. I mean, we see that a lot here in the D.C. area. So,
okay, I just got it up. It's the Daily Wire, not Roll Call.
Oh, yeah, Daily Wire. This is a whole different can of worms.
And you are absolutely correct. It is this article is so old; it was written on parchment. The Amanda Prestigiacomo, a April 19th, 2017 article entitled College Students Claim Objective Truth is a Racist Myth. So, but the fact is that I found this article after I found the more current article from ESPN essentially saying the same thing. So to your point, this has been going on for quite some time. Obviously, I've been distracted by bass fishing or working or some other nonsense and didn't pick up on the subtleties of how this type of propaganda wheedles itself into the conversation. But there it is, Pomona College president. Yeah,
there's a more kind of perilous thing here. It's become fashionable among journalists and journalism professors to say that being objective is counterproductive. Now it's important for journalists to have a commitment, especially to social justice and equity. And that is a lens which even places like the Washington Post are openly calling to use for the content of newspapers. And it's an absolute Pandora's box. And part of my frustration is that so many of the journalists at places like the Washington Post and elsewhere don't seem to have any BS radar for federal government false claims or perils. And so they're so busy with their social justice activism that they don't pay attention to the history of the FBI.
Well, maybe it's as simple, you know, using Occam's razor. Maybe it's as simple as the fact that they don't want to lose their jobs. You know, they're going to sit there and be part of the peanut gallery, the cheering section, and they'll go along with whatever the popular narrative is, because it's going to be that, and therefore anything contradictory would be racist. So therefore, they've got to mind their P's and Q's, stay in their lane, all those other cliches, just to make sure that they don't get that nasty little pink slip, you know, underneath their desk. I would think that was it. Just one small quote from this ancient article, this letter they wrote to the dean. The students explained that free speech has been, quote, appropriated by hegemonic institutions, unquote, and should ultimately be curtailed because, quote, it is given those who seek to perpetuate systems of domination a platform to project their bigotry, unquote. Good grief.
Yeah, this is something which I should probably make a confession of here, because since I was raised in the mountains of Virginia, I guess I'm part of that dominance. And, you know, because people from the mountains of Virginia are known to have this contact network, a bunch of insiders. And so, you know, you rise in the media, and pretty soon it's all, you know, almost everybody who's anybody is, you know, from the mountains of Virginia.
I didn't know the mountains of Virginia could be were synonymous with hegemonic institutions. That's interesting. I must have missed that one.
I was thinking of using that word, but I knew I would mispronounce it all to hell.
Hegemonic?
Yes.
Yeah.
Hegemonic.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it. But, you know, it's a word that doesn't stick in my ear. So I'm thinking of how it looks on the page. And, you know, there was a reason I could never get a job sight reading.
Well, I that's just a word that loiters in my vocabulary. I can't imagine ever actually using
prep school. It's a great word, and it's very, very useful here. I'm rather amused that the college students must have had a dictionary and they plucked that one out there. Who knows?
Yeah. Well, I think they were still publishing the thesaurus back then. They probably came up with you know, a whole bunch of really great synonyms. But the beat goes on. It'll be interesting to see how the next week develops with regard to, you know, busting up dams and moving large and dangerous weapons around and so on, not to mention the fun and games inside the logic-free zone. But I tell you this, before the next sonic boom comes along and we have to go hide out under our desks, I need to tell everybody listening who wrote in, you missed the deadline to register to win the autographed 50-gallon vat of Raging Bitch autographed by Jim Bovard. Big wiener will be renounced after next week's pod. Oh, and congratulations to the family of the late Jay Clark, last week's winner of Jim's 1979 Ford Pinto. You recall it was the rare exploding model with the Ralph Nader level of combination. Tragically, the Pinto did live up to its reputation and spontaneously burst into flames just before it could be towed.
I had fond memories of that Ford Pinto back in the 1970s. Did some good tailgating.
Well, I'm glad you were able to live through it. I guess you got to get past the warranty and everything. Next week, we're going to be giving away a box of 5-Nade turtleneck diapers. Yes, it's the same ones the president wears, so you don't have to change yourself once a day. Remember, that Friday deadline to get in there. And, of course, the days are turning colder now, reminding us to remind you that just 61 shoplifting days are left till Christmas. And while Old Vermont 90-durometer fruitcake is still popular, why not step out of the ordinary and into the genius of giving Grandma and all your family members instructive and entertaining reading material penned by no one other than my partner, James Bovard. I can assure you, strangers will be turgid with envy, seeing freedom in chains, lost rights, even the equestrian public policy hooligan stuffed into those black mesh stockings hanging from the festive garter belts on the mantle. Head over to the Amazon.com region for a good deal. While you're there, you ought to grab 50 stories from 50 years in radio for the youngsters. Just think of the fun they'll have feeding the shredder with each page. If you have your own personal debt ceiling, get them a free subscription to Brian Wilson Writes on Substack. It's better than a lobotomy and twice as effective. Jim Bovard and myself will reconvene next week with more soporific commentary than you could possibly endure. Be sure to warn your neighbors. For the rising media star of radio, TV, and keyboard, James Bovard, a brief appearance by Joe Ted as the Rambelicus, I shall remain Brian Wilson, but only until February 30th. Oh, and don't forget to remember our separate but equally combustible websites where we stash the really good stuff, cleverly named jimbovard.com and brianwilson.net. With the best of the worst we can do for now, thanks for chewing through the razor wire to join us. Until next time, pull the plug, Joe.